This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. I'd like to thank our sponsors who make our podcast possible. We tape our podcast with the ongoing support of Raider and Jason Sikora, our sound engineer. Raider is a hands-on IT service provider that integrates all of your needs for advanced technical support, effective communication options, and cybersecurity. Raider's motto is, you just want it to work, we understand. Please visit RaiderSolutions.com for more information. Iberia Bank and First Horizon, who are now one bank. Two relationship-driven banks, both leaders in the industry, have officially joined forces. The combination of Iberia Bank and First Horizon creates a leading financial services company dedicated to enriching the lives of their clients, associates, and their communities. I'd also like to thank Lafayette General Health, who has joined the Ochsner Health family and is now Ochsner Lafayette General. As one health system, Ochsner Lafayette General will provide expanded services and enhanced care from the familiar faces you already trust. Ochsner Lafayette General means more resources to help solve healthcare's toughest problems, reinvesting in our communities, and being further committed to health and wellness. Ochsner Lafayette General. Together means more. Learn more today at togethermeansmore.org. Carly Almlabar, President and CEO of United Way of Acadiana, is our guest today. Many of you know Carly as a candidate in the 2019 Lafayette Parish President's Race. Prior to that, she worked with Southern Lifestyle Development, and she was head of development and planning for Lafayette Consolidated Government. Carly also served as assistant to City Parish President Joey Durrell, overseeing communications and community relations for local government, and she served as our parish's legislative liaison in Baton Rouge. She previously spent 8 years working in the nonprofit sector, notably for Community Foundation of Acadiana and Acadiana Youth. On the volunteer front, Carly served as chair of Leadership Institute of Acadiana, the parent organization of Leadership Lafayette. In Junior League of Lafayette, she served as Chief Financial Officer and Communications Vice President. She was a longtime board member of Lafayette Youth Soccer Association, and she was honored as a woman who means business and a top 20 under 40 young professional. And I think this is something of note. She was the first volunteer of CASA locally, which, if you know about that, it's the court-appointed special advocates, a group that does so much good for youth in our community that really need a voice. And also, she led the Fix the Charter group, a citizen-driven effort that supported the reorganization of our Lafayette Consolidated Government into separate city and parish councils. Carly graduated from Northwestern University in Illinois, and she holds a master's degree in public administration from LSU. So Carly Almlabar, I've really just barely scratched the surface of what you've done. Welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thank you. Good to be with you, Jane.
Yeah,
thanks.
And welcome to my home. You see all the equipment here. I've got two microphones now.
Right.
And I want to give a shout out to Carl Fontenot at KRVS. He's been kind of tutoring me on how to edit these tapes while we're still in a COVID transition.
Right.
I'm excited.
Well, it looks great.
Yeah.
The setup is wonderful.
Yeah. So thank you for taking time. United Way of Acadiana is kind of the pinnacle to me of what our community stands for. You know, people helping each other.
Right.
And although it's a national and I guess an international group, I'm not sure of the structure of it, United Way really helps people in education essentials and earnings, and your diverse background kind of brings, I think, everything that they needed to the table. So what a position to have during COVID and hurricanes.
Right. Huh? Well, you know, it's I started the role about 2 weeks before COVID really hit, before the governor shut down schools.
Good timing.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, I tell people I started a job with a big component in disaster relief in a year where we have three disasters, you know, first COVID, then Laura, now Delta. So it's quite a different year, quite, you know, it's an interesting thing to join an organization and then have your staff almost immediately working from home and, you know, challenges like that when you're trying to
right.
get your feet under you. You know, we've been able, I think there's a lot of folks in the community who have seen the importance of United Way over the last 7-8 months, the different ways that we've helped respond, particularly to COVID and then, you know, also to the storms. Mm-hmm. And so in that way, it's been a good, I think, reminder to folks about the importance of the organization. But it's definitely been an interesting way to start a job.
Right. Carly, for a lot of us don't really know what's going on with United Way. Like
right.
I hear about it and I get emails from Acadiana VOAD, which
yes.
is the volunteer.
Yes.
What does VOAD stand for?
It's Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster.
Yeah.
And yes. And so that's a coalition and there's chapters of that coalition throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the disaster relief structure. FEMA's are trained, you know, FEMA employees are trained to work with VOADs at the local level following mm-hmm. a disaster. And so, you know, our Acadiana VOAD has been up and running. You know, there's some great folks in our community.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Tony Crater and Margaret Trahan and Kim Boudreaux who helped started in the mid-2000s or mm-hmm. really activated in the mid-2000s after we had some pretty terrible disasters, as many remember. And then it's stayed active since and is, you know, in what we might call a good year, the VOAD group only has to meet once or twice,
right?
Right? And only has to get on a couple of, you know, now we would do a Zoom call, but a couple mm-hmm. of meetings, elect officers, make sure the disaster plan's ready to go, and then they call it
right.
a year. 2020 has been different. We met as a group kind of the first day of COVID, and we have been meeting regularly since mm-hmm. then in 2020.
And I do want to say, I know after back in 2016, when the flood came, that August 2016 flood, our Acadiana VOAD group is so effective
yes.
that when people were looking around the country about where to volunteer, you know, Acadiana was chosen. Groups would come in from around the country because our local community is really organized.
Yes.
These, you know, nonprofit groups, not just United Way, but the people that you team with, Catholic Charities
yes.
and Red Cross and the
yes.
all, you know, Rebuilding Together, all these groups
yes.
work well together.
Yes.
And I guess VOAD is kind of a common glue.
Yes.
To keep everybody, like, who's doing what? Who's on first?
Exactly.
Who's doing this? So
right.
you don't
and
have redundancies.
Right, right. And I think COVID was a different type of disaster for all of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think you had the immediate concern about minimizing and mitigating the spread of COVID, but then you had a lot of the economic fallout and some
yeah.
of the food relief, and I know you've done some conversations with Lee about
mm-hmm.
homeless
Lee
and
Rochelle.
Serving.
Yep.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's there has COVID has been a different disaster, but VOAD has been communicating throughout so that we can provide the best services possible to mm-hmm. folks in our community who have become vulnerable or have real needs because of COVID.
Right.
You know, at United Way, we actually were able, in partnership with Second Harvest and through help with 232 Help, we were able to stand up a volunteer-driven food delivery system, basically, during, and it's still ongoing, to help those impacted by COVID who were, you know, medically vulnerable and couldn't leave their homes because of COVID or because they had COVID and they couldn't leave their homes or they were in quarantine. And so we were able, because our VOAD was so strong and because our partners were so well networked, we were able to match and said, you know, United Way has volunteers that are willing to mm-hmm. mobilize. Second Harvest had meals and yeah. 232 Help was getting calls of people who said, I've no way to get food. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I think that's a testament in part to how strong our VOAD is, that our communication was good enough to be able to kind of respond to the need in our community.
It seemed like for a while there was so much of the news about people in these long lines waiting to get hot meals,
yeah.
you know, back earlier in the spring.
Yeah.
And I don't know how long that went on, but we're taping this, what is this, October 20th?
Yeah.
Where are we right now? Like, are people, now that we're in phase three, what's going on? Like, I feel like I'm in this little bubble.
Yeah.
Because I don't really know. We've been fortunate. My
yeah.
husband's work his law practice, never really missed a beat.
Right.
But so many lawyers did, but even more critically, so many service people
right.
have been out of work.
Right.
How would you assess where Lafayette and Acadiana is right now?
You know, when I talk to folks, there's more need out there. I mean, we're seeing than you know, let's say this time last year. You mm-hmm. know, we're seeing more people out of work, more people underemployed or unemployed as a result of COVID. They haven't been able to get back mm-hmm. to, and so the needs are greater for food need. Housing is, you know, a big need. Housing is also complicated by the hurricanes. So
right.
Finding people housing in a market where, you know, you have folks coming from Lake Charles to rent houses for a little mm-hmm. while is just another challenge for those who work in housing specifically. So I think we can expect to see a higher level of need for a little while in our community because of COVID and the kind of probably not the initial impacts, we're probably past the initial impacts, but the secondary impacts, you know,
right.
the businesses that don't quite get back to the same employment levels that, mm-hmm. you know, and those. And so, you know, when I talk to, whether I'm talking to donors or fellow people in the social service field, you know, I share that I think we're in for a little bit more need for the services we provide for a little while, you know, while our economy comes back and, mm-hmm. and, you know, that's not going to happen overnight.
Right.
I think housing is going to be one of the more critical needs that we're going to have to come together. Mm-hmm. You know, as evictions start to happen, folks who haven't been able to pay their rent, you know, and that'll become more critical in the coming months.
This has been such a paradox. Before the hurricane, you know, you had people that couldn't pay their rent, and the landlords don't really want them to be evicted because there was a surplus of rental housing.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody could afford it, and it was out there. And I know with UL building all these new dorms and all, you could see all the homes for rent.
Mm-hmm.
And then Laura came through, and my husband's family, they're all from Lake Charles. Some of them are leasing mm-hmm. all around us over here by the oil center. So things flipped upside down overnight,
right?
Which was good maybe for landlords,
mm-hmm.
but then you do have people where probably some of them are still hanging on by the skin of their teeth
right.
in the homes that they're in.
Right.
So,
or some of the folks who are in hotels who are trying to get housed,
mm-hmm.
the rental, you know, there's just not as much rental property out there available, you know, so the pressures are different. It's
right.
just a complicating factor.
Right. And so there's all these groups I know that partner with you, and I want to get into what United Way is doing, but just to follow up on this. So Lee Rochelle is with the Acadiana Regional Coalition for the Homeless.
Yes.
And there are other groups that work with you and her,
mm-hmm.
but this is, it seems like it's going to be a long-term
yeah.
issue beyond 2020, because a lot
so.
Of these people are not, they're not going to be able to catch
right.
up.
Right. And they're not, you know, some have already been evicted and need pathways back into homes. We probably are facing some evictions in the future that we're going to have to figure out, you know,
mm-hmm.
how to help those folks. So I think, you know, and I think you already kind of said it, the way we're going to come together, we're going to problem solve and we're going to help our neighbors. And that's what, you know, United Way is about. And that's what so many of the organizations that
mm-hmm.
that are working with us in the VOAD
right.
are about.
Right. So the big picture, if we're not dealing with catastrophes,
right.
United Way several years back decided to focus on education, essentials, and earnings.
Yes.
And they've always been focused on people in need.
Right.
Giving them tools as a hand up.
Right.
To help people help themselves.
Right.
If you want to talk about,
yeah.
I mean, I know you were on the board of United Way before
right.
you were hired
right.
to be CEO, but I mean, is there one you want to jump into? Is there one that stands out more?
You know, I think you said it really well. You know, you're giving people the building blocks for a better life. And so when United Way, a little over 10 years ago, focused its energies in what we now call the three E's, because mm-hmm. it's the easy, education, earnings, essentials, the idea was, you know, if we had a community that was educated, financially stable and had their basic needs met, mm-hmm. then, you know, we would have a thriving and flourishing community. So United Way, I think a lot of folks know, is grants to nonprofit organizations. And then we also do, in some cases, our own programming to fill in gaps that we see where we don't see nonprofit providers doing those mm-hmm. doing those things. So, for instance, in the earning space, we fund a few programs, and then we also operate the VITA, the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program. So we help low and moderate income individuals with their tax mm-hmm. preparation. And so we're, you know, in the education space, we fund several educational programs with, you know, organizations that everyone's familiar with, like mm-hmm. Boys and Girls Club and Big Brothers Big Sisters. And in some cases, we work with school systems. And then we also have helped bring Leader in Me yeah. across the region.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. And work, you know, on the social emotional learning for kids and empowerment and mm-hmm. And then essentials is kind of, you know, making sure that folks' basic needs are met. So, you know, whether that's our support of some of Catholic Charities programs or Faith House or, you know, making sure mm-hmm. that our community can provide the basic needs to those most vulnerable. And that's where our disaster relief comes in as well. And, you know, we kind of stand at the ready anytime a disaster mm-hmm. comes through to make sure that our community is getting the support that we need. And so, you know, United Way is really a convener for this work. And so a lot of folks, sometimes I think one of the things that people get most confused about, I guess, is we both grant money to programs and then we operate some of our own programs. Yeah. And it's all based on trying to move the needle in those three areas. And so sometimes a problem is brought to us and, you know, we know it needs a solution. And so we step up and we say, look, we'll help deploy Leader in Me throughout the region. You know, other cases, we see the programs that some of our local organizations are involved in and say, we really think that's important to mm-hmm. the educational success of our community. So
mm-hmm. is our community, like all the nonprofits, what is it like working? Do you feel like your partners are there? Do you work closely with a lot of other nonprofits?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think 2020 is a really different year, but there's no doubt that 2020 has allowed us to work really collaboratively together. Specifically anyone that's touching the most vulnerable or in disaster mm-hmm. relief. But generally, I think there's that spirit anyway. You know, we started at United Way a little while back, something we called Nonprofit Meetup. And so we're convening nonprofits.
Networking.
Yeah, convening mm-hmm. nonprofits, sharing best practices, sometimes sharing, you know, fundraising tips. We just did, of course, a virtual meeting about virtual event planning. And we had a few folks.
Twilight Zone.
Right. And so we had a few folks give presentations mm-hmm. about their tips and tricks for virtual events because, you know, so many of our local nonprofits rely on event income as a really important part of how their operating budget is funded. And so mm-hmm. many of them have had to pivot in this, you know, disaster time. And so, you know, we do things like that. Over the summer, in partnership with Parish Proud, we launched a virtual volunteer center, which has been great because you may or may not know that in the 90s, United Way of Acadiana merged with what was then called the Volunteer Center.
No, I didn't know that.
The Volunteer Center is really about mobilizing volunteers to do work in our community. And so that's been a part of United Way for more than 20 years. And because we were able to partner with Parish Proud, we were able to bring volunteer opportunities online. We're able to register any organization that wants a platform in our community can register with us mm-hmm. and, you know, have access to their volunteers, but then also their volunteers can have access to other opportunities. And that's been great. That's been how we've coordinated some of the Lake Charles relief that we've mm-hmm. assisted with, how we've run our volunteers at our food distributions, how we do food delivery, how we've partnered with Parish Proud on litter pickup. And, you know, because we believe that, you know, a community where giving is strong, where volunteering is strong, and where advocating for the things you believe in is strong, will be a stronger community.
Right.
So
right. It's been interesting, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So it seems that in the past year, there's been quite a bit of consolidation among nonprofits. Mm-hmm. And I was talking with you before we started taping. I know that at Catholic Charities, I think they've taken on Food Net and some other, several
Rebuilding
other groups.
Together, yeah. And they took the Catholic bookstore, whose name escapes me.
I forgot about that.
Yes,
yeah, right. But the same has happened with United Way. If you want to talk about what's going on with United Way, taking on some other groups.
It's a little different at United Way. So if your listeners aren't familiar, we have a campus on Pinhook. That was the old Schilling Distributing. Mm-hmm.
By the railroad tracks, by the
freeway. And it was always envisioned to be what we call the multi-tenant center. And so a lot of folks don't know this, but we have Red Cross on site. We have Second Harvest, which if you're not familiar with Second Harvest, they've been the ones providing a lot of food to those in need over the last few months and before then, of course. And then So we've always housed kind of in our campus multiple nonprofits, and, you know, Habitat for Humanity's Restore was there a while back before they moved on to Johnston. And so we were able to bring in this year a new tenant, which was Casa of Sola. We mentioned Casa a second ago. But then we also signed a partnership with them because we really I'll speak about it from CASA's perspective for a moment. I think, you know, CASA serves a very specific group of foster children that they help advocate for in foster care, and they place volunteers to do that. And I think that, you know, those folks that have worked with CASA a long time started to realize that if they had stronger connections across the nonprofit sector, that they could see better outcomes for the kids in their care or in, you know, and the kids that are served by CASA, basically. And so, you know, we saw an opportunity, of course, because we're always trying to strengthen our multi-tenant center and have more, you know, we just sort of believe in a non-COVID era, the more atoms you have colliding, the more collaborative you can be in your work. And so it's ended up to be a really great win-win where, you know, CASA's in the building with us and, you know, they can have a difficult client need or situation where they need help. And there's just a lot more opportunities for cross collaboration.
Right.
So it's been really great.
It's a good use of resources.
Yeah.
And I know that Second Harvest, I'm not sure how that worked, but I know that Drew Brees and his family contributed quite a bit of money to upgrade.
They did a partnership and I don't want to talk out of school because I'm not familiar with the details, but they did a partnership with Second Harvest that really allowed a lot of meal delivery during COVID. So Second Harvest has definitely been working really hard these last few months, helping a lot of people in need.
What is it like right now? And really before COVID, before all the hurricane, you know, disaster. What is it like raising money for a group? If you can talk about that. It just seems like the work environments have changed, especially in 2020 where people are working remotely. Our oil and gas industry was a huge contributor, big factor in United Way's success in the past, and we really are in a different day.
We are. And I think, you know, from my perspective, and it is easy for me to say this, and it kind of goes back to what we talked about at the beginning of the interview. You know, it's been an interesting time to try to start working in an organization and meet donors that have been loyal to the organization for 20 years, because normally in a normal environment, that would have been the first thing that I was supposed to do. Well, for the first 3 months, nobody wanted to meet with anyone. And then shortly thereafter, you know, you're still trying to judge everyone's comfort level. Some people are happy to meet and other people still aren't ready. So it's been an interesting start in terms of raising funds. But the message when I am meeting with groups, whether it's a Zoom call or whatever, is to say, look, in all likelihood, if I'm meeting with you right now, it's because you're still employed. It's because you're fortunate enough to still have work. And the only way we're going to bring our community through this challenging time is if those of us that are fortunate enough to still have jobs are willing to give. And, you know, so it's a very uncertain time. None of us have ever been through this before, but we want to come together as a community. And, you know, I think that is that's easy for me because I believe it, you know, and it may be a time of great uncertainty where people are nervous to give. But if generally speaking, if I'm in a situation like that, talking to them, it's because they have the capacity to give at some level. And so, you know, it's really about helping our neighbors. And I think that we need to, you know, and I even appreciate being on here today, we need to continue to get that message out because that's, you know, our agencies that are asking for donations right now in many ways need them now more than ever.
Right.
And are helping people more now than they ever have before. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, the message. And there is uncertainty and insecurity out there. But, you know, that doesn't change that there in many cases are people who are more uncertain and more insecure than you are. And so
I'm thinking back to several years ago. I was a volunteer helping with Sarah Berthelot when she was still local.
Yeah.
And she's at the state level now, but a Lafayette area resident. But we would call on people. And I remember one guy at a law firm said, you know, I love giving to United Way because I don't have to worry then about who else to give to.
Right.
Because you will vet who gets the funds.
Yes.
You know, you can give to United Way knowing that if they're giving the money to a group, they've vetted the group to make sure that it's effective and that the money is spent in the manner it was supposed to be spent.
Right. And we have a rigorous application process. We have a reporting process. And importantly, we have relationships with those that we fund too. And so we can anticipate, and of course, you know, I'm only a few months in, so I'm still building some of those relationships and some I had before, but you know, we're trying to help the organizations that we fund succeed and we want them to share, you know, what their challenges are. We want them to, you know, ask us questions if they're struggling because, you know, we want to be part, we want to help make sure that the donor's investment and, you know, our participation is making that organization stronger.
Right. Any idea of how many nonprofits there are in our area?
You know, that there's, I've heard estimates, and I'm sure we could look it up on GuideStar, Secretary of State. You know, I've heard things like 700 to 1,000, but you have to imagine, you have to
remember. In this region?
Yeah, but you have to remember that it's, you know, there's you can register a lot of things as a nonprofit and then they can kind of go dormant or, you know, and then there are nonprofits that you don't think about, like foundations associated with maybe schools or things like that, or, you know, that you just, you just kind of don't think about when you think about the nonprofit sector. So, you know, I would say of organizations that we interact with on some sort of basis, I would guess in the neighborhood of 100, 150
that are really
that are active and viable in some way. And sometimes active and viable means no paid staff and
it just means
volunteer driven. And, and sometimes, you know, we're talking about
like the soccer association that you were involved with.
Yeah.
Maybe they have a paid,
staff.
They do.
They do. But they,
but a lot of volunteers.
Yeah. But a lot of volunteers, but you see that you'll see recreation associations that don't have paid staff, but they're nonprofits. And so you see those, what you might call niche nonprofits that are serving like, you know, a particular, like I'm working in this neighborhood and I'm a nonprofit or I'm, you know, I'm working with this. And then of course you see, I mean, many of our bigger nonprofits in the community are small businesses. I mean, they employ a lot of people and they, you know, they have dependable revenue streams and predictable expenses and, you know, have a lot of the same concerns that other small business owners have, you know, just govern differently.
I learned a lot when I was director of Upper Lafayette Economic Development. That's a 501c6.
Yes.
Like that's a business league.
Yep.
And your group and other nonprofits we're talking about are C3s.
Yep. Yep.
And that is a whole different level of oversight.
Yes.
I mean, you've got to really make sure your monies go for the manner intended.
Yes.
Oh, you know, it's, I've learned so much in what I did for those 10 years, but I have the utmost respect for people that work in the nonprofit world because you learn to do a lot with less.
Yes.
And, you know, the change in the economy or this or that, and it can turn up the, it can turn everything upside down overnight.
Right.
So I really have respect. And I didn't know until I got into that work that people actually study in college, and it's right. a professional yeah. field in mm-hmm. its own.
Yeah.
I just, you know, when you hear about nonprofits, most of us just don't really know
right.
what they do
right.
or how
right.
they run.
Right.
But they are businesses.
Yeah. Yeah. No, many of them are. And it kind of depends. I think that, you know, it's a tax status for some, and some people have a small cause that they, you know, mm-hmm. they need, but they need to be able to accept donations. And so the 501c3 is the right vehicle for them to do that.
Right.
But then, like you said, you have other organizations that are, mm-hmm. you know, have very specific missions and are moving forward and our businesses.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Carly, moving forward, I mean, here we are late October. What are you anticipating for United Way? Are there any big events planned for 2021? What's on the horizon?
Yeah, so we'll be announcing probably by the time this airs, we will do our annual Women Who Mean Business mm. this year, which we're excited about. We're going to do it in December.
Good.
And, you know, it's just always so special to mm-hmm. see the women who are nominated. So we're excited about that. And then, you know, looking into 2021, I think a lot of us are, you know, a little bit from an event standpoint, a little bit in a holding pattern still of what that looks like. You know, mm-hmm. we're going to do our Women Who Mean Businesses in a virtual format. But we're really focused on, you know, the impact to the community of our grant making, of our programs, and also continuing to identify some of the challenges in our community. We recently, in partnership with Women's Foundation, are helping to lead the Healthy Acadiana Coalition.
I saw that.
And I think that you look at the Healthy Acadiana Coalition has been around for a few mm-hmm. years and has done some great work. And so we partnered up to help lead that work, and we actually have, you know, Essentials Health is part of mm-hmm. Essentials for us. So it was an easy match. And we, even before COVID, some of the feedback that we had gotten from the community was that, you know, getting more involved in health mm-hmm. was something that was needed. And then I think COVID just shines a bigger light on that,
right.
of course.
That was Bradley Cruz that
yes,
was
yes.
really the spearhead.
Yes.
Is he's still involved?
He is, but he's a little busy with Handy Stop.
Downtown.
So yeah. So we're going to help move that along.
Yeah.
And, you know,
that's a great group.
Yes. And so,
and that's like, let me just put in a plug for
yes,
people that are giving
please.
Food to, you know, Second Harvest or
yes.
Food Net. One of the things I learned from the,
Healthy Acadiana,
thank you, was that when we give food, don't just give like processed
yeah.
mac and cheese or, you know, yeah. junky kind of stuff
yeah.
out of your pantry that's old. They really want to let people know that we can be thoughtful
mm-hmm.
and give whole grain products
yeah.
or lower sugar things
yep.
or more. You can't really give fruits and vegetables because they'll spoil in many
right,
cases,
right.
but there are healthy choices
yeah.
that people can make when they're giving to others. The
yep.
same things you would want to eat or have your children eat, to be thoughtful when you're giving.
Yep. And yeah. Healthy Acadiana is actually doing right now a healthy food drive that you can go on their Facebook page and you can see how mm-hmm. to purchase for Second Harvest. So
yeah.
exactly. Good
yeah.
opportunity to do that plug too.
Yeah. Because I remember going in the Food Net warehouse a few years back, and some people would just give things like that really should have been in the garbage can, you know, ketchup that was so old, it was separated. And this is an opportunity to help people.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
help them,
right.
you know,
become
have a healthy,
healthy.
Meal,
yes.
or at least
yes.
healthier
yeah.
than no meal. So, well, that sounds good. So I guess you're just playing it by ear with the
yeah,
COVID shutdown.
Yeah, as far as events, I mean, it really, a lot of us are kind of rethinking, you know, mm-hmm. of course, but the important thing for United Way is the mission side, which is just as important. And so, you know, those things have been able to stay on track and, mm-hmm. you know, we'll continue. We typically open our grant cycle up at the end of the year. Those applications will be due in February. And so, you know, already having those conversations, you know, just working through all of our programs and continuing to provide the support and continuing to monitor the needs in the community.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, there's a lot out there and it's changing. And so we're trying to make sure that all the nonprofit sector is prepared to adapt and
right.
help.
Right. Well, as we sit here, I know that you're going to go on vacation for a few days, and you haven't really had one.
No.
And we didn't talk about the race for parish president, but I want to thank you for putting yourself, you know, all the candidates, but putting yourself out there. I know you were not someone that had always wanted to run for office.
Never.
But you brought a sincere desire to make our community the best it can be. And people don't realize if they haven't run. It's a huge commitment, and I know it took your family and your friends. You really rallied a lot of volunteers, and it was so well done.
I think it's when we were talking about just most of my roles have been in some, you know, type of service. And so when I ran for office, it was the same kind of spirit, you know? Mm-hmm. And so for me, you know, the transition to United Way has been easy because like you said, I never thought I would run for office. So it was very easy, you know, for me to kind of wake up the next day and say, okay, well, nothing's really changed for me. Mm-hmm. This is still what drives me. I just have to find the best way to be effective.
I think United Way is so lucky to have you. And I want to pivot, if we can, to a more personal talk. You moved to Acadiana in 1998.
Yes.
To Eunice. Is that right?
Church Point. Yeah.
You were with Teach for America.
Yep.
And there's a love story involved in this. And I had your husband, Will Labar, on the show. He's with CGI. I had him on, maybe a year and a half ago or so. But he told me that he moved down here for love.
Yeah.
He met this young Carly Alm.
Yes.
And do you mind sharing that story from your perspective?
Oh, sure. Of course. So the first summer after I taught... I taught high school math in Church Point, and
what a change, huh?
It was great, and so you know, you're a teacher, you have the summer off. So I got an internship in the Washington D.C. area. Will was actually working with a friend of mine from college, and the friend of mine from college planned a girls' night out, and at the last minute, one of the girls kind of couldn't go, and so Will's to, you know. Maggie was her name. Maggie's going around the office, and she's like, okay, who wants the extra ticket? So Will said, sure, I'll take it.
On the girls' night out.
Yeah, on the girls' night out. So it was a Journey Foreigner concert. And
Yeah.
And so...
who could turn that down?
Right. And so, you know, we went to the concert and then just met and enjoyed talking. And mm-hmm. so kind of dated the rest of the summer. And then after a year-long distance, you know, at that point, you know, South Louisiana was like... you know, in my blood, I was like, this place is great. I don't want to leave. So he agreed to move down here. And
if I remember right, he didn't really have a position. Like, he was working, but he knew he wanted to come.
Yeah. He was able to convince his company, mm-hmm. That he could work from home. I mean, this was 2000. This was before anyone was really telecommuting or remote working or whatever, but the technology existed. So mm-hmm. he was able to convince them to let him keep his job. And that's actually still the same job that he has today. So it used to be, he used to work for a company called AMS, which was purchased by CGI. Mm-hmm. And so he still has the same role.
And CGI has been hiring hundreds of people locally. Yeah. And I really think your love story, I'm going to reach out here, but I think you and Will being here is what made CGI invest in this community. I mean, I think you've done quite a bit.
CGI may have a different version
of
the story.
But they're not here at the table, so this is our version.
Right.
But they are here, and you guys are still here. Yeah. And I know you've both been active, as I said in your introduction, with Lafayette Youth Soccer.
Yeah.
I mean, did you play soccer as a young girl?
So I played a little bit, but... you know, I tell
kind of low to the ground. I bet you were good.
No, I wasn't that good. I tell people I'm a sports fan who married a soccer player.
Okay.
And so then I became a soccer fan because, you know, I married a soccer player. Will is a good soccer player and is also a really good coach. And so, when we did play and, you know, as we've kind of said, I really have a passion for community work, community organizations. So just getting involved in soccer, I wanted to help the mm-hmm. the Youth Soccer Association. And so I did serve on the board for a few years and, you know, had nonprofit experience that was able to help them, you know, help them improve some of their processes and understand, you know, the most of the folks who get involved in soccer do so because they have a passion for soccer. So it was, they enjoyed having someone around who had also a passion for nonprofits and soccer.
I need that. Yeah.
So it was a good, it was a good opportunity to be involved. So
right.
I just, have a hard time saying no to community stuff.
I know you do. I know. And I'm just so glad you're here with us. And you guys share the love of Josie.
Yes.
Your puppy.
Yes.
And Josie kind of runs the show.
She runs the show. She's, 13-ish now.
Oh, is
and,
she?
And yeah. And, but she acts like a puppy. So she's just, she'll still jump on you if you come meet her.
And she, you met Katie or you know Katie. I've got this knucklehead puppy dog that's 11 and a half.
Yeah.
And she is just
a
spitfire. But they really do run the house.
Yes. Oh, yes. Josie runs the house.
I know. What do you do outside of, you're always so busy with community work. What do you like to do when you relax?
So, the last few months, and Will tell you, I've been terrible at relaxing. That's just, I think taking over an organization in a disaster, and, I've really given it like my full focus and have really pushed pretty hard for a lot of reasons. And it was just, it was what I thought the role and the community needed right now with COVID and other things. And so, I feel like lately I haven't done a lot of that, but, Will and I love to travel. I love to read, love to, exercise, go through different phases of what type of exercise I'm doing. Lately, it's been yoga if I can get around to
it. I've gotten into yoga and stretching.
Yes.
Because that's helps the aches and pains, doesn't it?
Yeah. And so
it feels good.
And just, Will loves to cook. He's a really good cook. Oh yeah. And he, so I love to eat his cooking.
Good.
I used to try to cook, and now I just leave it to him because he's so much more talented at it than I am. So love to travel.
That's your story.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So just normal basic stuff. Love to spend time with friends and see my mom when I can. She's in Arkansas. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you've got some loyal friends. I think back to the campaign again, and I don't think I've ever seen any campaign locally that just galvanized so many volunteers. And I know a lot of them were your close friends, but they would get their friends to come on. And it was just a joy to watch, especially younger people getting a spark of interest in politics.
Yeah. Well, so. I think it's all based in love of community. Mm-hmm. And so I think that makes it easy. We all want to make the community that we live in a better place. And so it's just about, mobilizing people to do that in a lot of different ways, and it's sometimes it's picking up trash and sometimes it's serving food and sometimes it's volunteering on a soccer field. And in that particular case, it was, volunteering on a campaign, but it's really more about like love for the community.
Mm-hmm. So. We could all make a difference.
Right.
Each one of us, no matter what our skills or talents or economic status, each of us can make a difference.
Right.
And I want to thank you for bringing that spirit of can do and of philanthropy to our community.
Thanks.
And I'm looking at our notes. We had kind of made a little pact. We would shout out to three of the big companies that really do support United Way.
And there's so many more. I'm going to forget more, but those are three we talked about in the pre-interview.
But one of Discover Lafayette's very loyal and big sponsors is Iberia Bank. So I don't want to let that go by.
Now First Horizon.
Yes,
probably
First Horizon.
Supposed to say that.
And then, and they haven't gotten on me yet, so thank you. And then Acadian Companies the Schumacher Group. So I know you're grateful for them.
Yeah, and really so many more. And there's so many that, we have such a strong presence with so many in the oil and gas sector and so many in the finance sector. And, the United Way wouldn't be where it is today without so many of our awesome corporate partners. So we're so grateful.
Yeah. Well, Carly on the bar, thank you for joining
us. Oh, thanks. It was so fun.
Discover Lafayette. And
thanks for your time.
Again, thank you. I want to thank our listeners and encourage you to please subscribe to the podcast and share it. If you can share this on social media, let people know. You can go to your phone or device and you can subscribe to Discover Lafayette. And we produce a new show every week, and they come out typically Friday morning. And so it's a way to learn more about Carly on the bar, and there's probably about 175 other great interviews. You can go to the website, discoverlafayette.net. And again, our sponsors, Iberia Bank, First Horizon, Lafayette General Health, which is now Ochsner, yeah. Lafayette General, and Raider has just been an ongoing sponsor and helped me keep this podcast going.
And Chris is on the United Way board.
Oh, that's right.
Awesome.
You're
has
lucky.
Been awesome.
Chris
oh,
Raider's
yes.
the best.
Yes.
He's just wonderful. So thank you for joining us. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift.